I'm going to present you today interactive audio for video game mainly. What's the job about? How do you work? What's the kind of environment? With whom you're working, both on the audio side and on the general side of producing a video game with programmers, modelers, and so on. And on the second part, I'll present you more hands-on example using Wyze. Wyze is the software that Audio Kinetic is developing. So I'm working at Audio Kinetic. I'm a founder and a product director, so I'm defining the specs of Wyze. And Wyze is an acronym for WaveWorks Interactive Sound Engine. And WaveWorks was the former name of the company, and we had to change it because a company in Vancouver were producing light balls or something like that, named WaveWorks. So we switch it to Audio Kinetic. So first section, let's say an hour and 15 minutes, more general overview of the industry, how you work and so on, and some reality you have to face when you're producing a game as a sound designer, as the pin point person on the audio. And then we'll get more hands-on information. So we'll have a break in between. And we're like 15 people, so don't hesitate to ask questions and interrupt and so on. That's interactive, right? Interactive with you. So who's playing game amongst you? Who's a gamer? Okay, so two-thirds of the class. So who's a hardcore gamer? All right. Okay, so let's go with it. So general overview of the game development, audio lead profile. So I'm going to say a lot of times sound designers, and what I meant is audio lead. I try to change sound designer just because we've got the traditional sound designers that are producing wave files, sound effects for films or for any kind of media. And I don't talk about this guy producing the asset. I'm talking about the audio lead, the person that is really responsible for designing what are the sound effects, the music, the ambiences, the voice I need in my project, and how I will integrate them, and how I will make them interactive in the game. And that's the audio lead job. And this is going to be the interesting part. Interactivity, artistic, and technology. This is some kind of a balance you have to find when you're producing a game, and I'm going to go into that. And on the second part, some authoring example using Wyze. So, developing a game today, it at least 18 to 24 months. If you're producing huge games, it will be 3 years, 4 years, maybe 5 years. If you're playing a World of Warcraft kind of games, these are 5 years project. And when it's out, they're producing content for another 5 years. So these are really involved projects. But you will have, most of the game are at least 18 to 24 months, and you're working with teams that goes between 50 to 150 person, 200 sometimes. And if you add everyone around it, could be 300 persons working on a project. Not full-time during 24 years, but you'll have these peak with a lot of people into it. And this is the kind of budget you'll have for a game. 10 to 20 millions, could be 30, 40, depending on the kind of project you're doing. And audio will take, I don't know, 1 or 2 millions. And when I started games like 10 years ago, I started my career before Audio Kinetic at Ubisoft as a sound designer, like in 97, something like that. And we had to record something around 500 to 1,000 lines of dialogue. And now it's more, when I'm talking with companies, more, yeah, that game didn't have that many voices, like 25,000 and 35,000 and 100,000 and so on. So that's, yeah, and so, when you do record, I don't know, 40 actors or 50 actors that has all these lines in English, and then you're localizing your game in 7 different languages, so that's a great bunch of money just for the voices there. Okay, let's talk about the team. So who you'll have in a team, you'll have the producer. So that's not, in video game, the producer is not the person that brings the money. It's not like on the movie industry. They're more like the person that tries to get a team around it and make the project on time and deal with if you're doing a license with a company like Warner's or I don't know, Disney and so on, you're the pinpoint person between the project and these big companies. So you're kind of the conductor of an orchestra. And then you've got the designer team, the creative director, which is the holders of the vision. That's the réalisateur. What is the name? Director. Yeah, exactly. Director of the. And you've got game designer, which are more in charge of the rules, how you will have your main character moving in the environment. What is the feedback mechanism to indicate how you're playing as a player? So you get some feedbacks. Are you good? Are you bad? Are you going in the right direction? And so on. And then you've got the level designer, which are taking these rules and taking the universe and try to make a level design out of that. So what is the pace of the different puzzles you have to solve, or the storyline you have to inject throughout your gameplay and so on. So these are kind of responsibilities. And then you've got the graphic departments. You've got modelers, you've got animators that are creating the environments, the character and so on. This is a huge team most of the time, like 40, 50, 60 persons working on graphic elements. And then you've got programmers that are coding this game, that are coding and that are integrating all the assets into the game so that you've got something playable out of that. On the audio section, what you'll have the audio director. And this is like the manager of the budget, of the different resources in your team, and he will be responsible for the schedule, the budget, having the studio ready for a recording session, things like that, or licensing music for a game. So that's more administrative kind of task for it. And you get the audio lead. That's the person I want to talk about. I will talk the most during this presentation, which is the guy that is responsible for the audio on a project. Is the person that knows how audio should go in this game and what are the assets we have to create and how it will be integrated and how it will roll during the project. So he has to understand everything in the project so that his sound design can fit inside that. And you've got other person like the sound integrator that will take these 25,000 of dialogue lines and integrate that in the game, or these 100 minutes of music that are cut into little pieces of 5 seconds of music, and they will make them play in the game in an interactive way and so on, take the sound effects and on the animation and so on. And then you've got some sound engineer, and I'm talking here about like medium to big size company. For sure, if you're a small startup, you won't have all these guys. You'll have one guy doing everything. But if you're working at Electronic Arts, Ubisoft, or even A2M, that is more a medium-sized company, you've got all these profile working, all these person working with you. So the sound engineer is more like the classic job of being a sound engineer that knows how to produce great tracks, how to master it, do some mastering and so on it. And then you've got your composers and the sound designer you're hiring. Most of the time, they are subcontracted. Not all the time. It's a philosophy, a company philosophy. At Ubisoft, even though it was super huge with 15 projects out at the same time, which you could be sure that you need sound designers and composers all the time, we preferred to hire them because we were looking for, let's say, a sci-fi ambience kind of sound designer. And that was the best guy in Montreal to produce that, or in LA to produce it. We were kind of just looking for this guy for this kind of assets in this game. And then you need some jungle ambience kind of guy. So, and for many games, we had two composers, one creating the interactive music parts and another one more on the cinematics, where it's more linear and so on. So this is why we were preferring to subcontract them. So that's some kind of a... That's not really interesting. Doesn't look interesting, right? It's not looking like that. But still, you kind of have an idea of how many modelers, animators, and programmers, designer, producer, and so on. And where is the audio lead? The audio lead is somewhere around that. So don't imagine you're going to have your super studio and so on. No. Maybe you're sound designers, maybe you're a composer, but for you, that's the best place because you're near these guys that are designing everything in the game. They know what's happening in this game. And when something changes, they are underneath. These guys make the game happen. And these guys produce a lot of assets where you will have to put sound into it. So that's the best place for you to be. Because as the sound guy in the project, you're at the end of the pipeline. And projects slip. So, and you cannot slip. You cannot say, well, we will not ship for Christmas because I didn't have time to put my sound into the game. Because Christmas is 66% of the sales during the year. So you have to make Christmas. So the idea is that you're working for 18 months, 24 months in this project, so you talk with everyone. And you make sure that the assets are produced on time, and you make sure that when something changes, you know it. And you can change on your side as well, and so on. So that's some idea of it. Okay, so what is the profile for an audio lead? So that's just to give you a picture. Is it a job for me or not? So that might help you. So I've got a little quotes here, my own. The audio lead is the artistic manager. I try to find some kind of duality. Artistic manager of the creation process of the audio asset integration. So what's this manager part and what is the artistic part of this guy? So if we look at the artistic, he's the guy designing the artistic direction of the game. So how do you define an artistic direction? Well, you have to sit close the game designers and the creative director and so on to talk about it, to be really close to it. And you're overseeing the job of the sound designer, the composer you're hiring for that. You're doing the in-game tweaking, some integration, some mixing. So that's the artistic part. Oh boy, I kind of skipped a bunch. Okay, so and on the manager side, you're doing some planning anyway, and you're doing some follow-up. You're involved into the tool creation because there's not like the office of video game where you just like open Word and you're doing some kind of job in Excel and so on. So there's some game engine in the industry like the Unreal game engine and so on, but still these are covering like kind of one piece of it, and since your project is a bit different, you have to create new tools around it. So design audio according to technological constraints. So it could be fine to say, hey, it's cool if we've got like 25 tracks of music streaming and we're kind of changing the volume of them based on how the player is playing. So that's cool, but 25 tracks, it's a lot of bandwidth. And when you play this on an Xbox 360 from the DVD, it's just too much. You cannot stream because the bandwidth is too much. So you have to make a design that fits your technological constraint. And you're not the only one streaming out of the DVD. You've got graphics, and you've got physics, and you've got AI, and so on. So you've got this bandwidth on the total. So let's do your design inside of that. Integration manager, doing some profiling and debugging. So it's all about, and I've got some slides after that, it's all about performance, and it's all about bug, because it's technology. And shipping a game is kind of a little miracle every time, because it doesn't work for a long time, and then you've got something playing. But don't open the door, it crashes, and so on. And it takes a lot of time before you've got every aspect of the gameplay in your game, and it's really playable, and you've got your story and so on. And all of a sudden, it's really working, and it's not Christmas yet, and we're shipping the game, and it's cool. But it's a lot of, technology kind of unsafe. And performance keeper, you could have the best sound, but if it takes, 50% of the CPU, you're going to have someone noticing someday, saying, hey, let's cut that by, let's take 10% for audio and we'll keep the rest. So, so what do you profile again? So for sure, you have to play games a bit or being a gamer, just because if you're doing a movie, I hope you're listening to movies, you're watching movie. I think some basis in computer science, because you don't have to be a programmer to do this job, but the more you know about computer, the more you know about hacking a text file so that the game runs or not and so on, the easier it is in this kind of environment you are. And that's the most important, having a solid background in traditional audio, because as the audio lead, you're gonna touch every aspect of audio. And that's like music. You're working with a composer. You're doing the music design for the composer. Composer follows your guideline. And the guidelines are crazy, like, I need a stereo track with a mono track, they are this long, and then I need a transition between this and that, and your fade will be 0.5 seconds, and it's crazy, because it's the only way the engine plays the music. So you're kind of designing for him, and the composer says, well, okay. And he tried to start to figuring out that after some time. And there's some musical language around it. Recording and mixing, for sure. MIDI, audio synthesis, sound design techniques, and so on. Acoustic and physics, because now the machine are just performant enough. Hello, come on in. To get some reverb in real time, for example. So instead of canning the reverb on the WAV files directly, you're just having real-time reverb. So all your files are dry, and they are affected at runtime. And you could have several reverbs. If you've got players in another room, let's say a bathroom, and you're in a church, and so on, you've got several environments at the same time, and you'll have some occlusion and some obstruction. So the sound is muffled, but as you're opening the door, you've got some in the opening, but you need to like kind of relocate the sounds in the opening and so on. So the more you know about acoustic, the easier it is to find a hack to reproduce that in the game. Because games don't reproduce real acoustics, just too much cheap to do that. So everything you can learn about mixing movie will help you for mixing games. And games just have other stuff to care about because it's interactive, it's not linear. We'll talk about it later on. But the real factor is there. That's the key to survive. It's the human skill. So it's being able to deal with insecurity. Andy, it's not decided yet. And you return 2 weeks after, it's still not decided. And 2 months after, it's still not to decide. And a year after that, well, we just skipped this part, or it's not in the game anymore. But you're you're walking on eggs, and you don't know, and you try to get some ground, but it's always evolving. And being able to work a lot, especially when you're starting, for sure you're gonna gain some experience. But when I started, I was working like hell. Like these kind of, 10 hours, 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day, and you've got crunches, but your crunch just lasts 6 months, so it's really intense. And sometimes, like, they're starting a new game, so you're on the new game, so you've got some time there, and you have to finish the other one, and so on. And communication. It's all about communication, especially because you're the sound guy. And the problem with sound is that you cannot see sound. That's the problem. We live in a world driven by eye, by vision, by what you see. And it's a video game. It's visual. And they are 149 people working on visual. And you're the guy with sound. So they don't care about sound. It was worse. It's better because sound's going better and we're kind of gaining some some credibility, but it still, it's just sound. So you have to make them understand that, well, it's just sound, but with sound, I can create emotion. I can create fear. I can create a sense of speed. I can create a sense of it's dangerous or it's safe at this moment. And you have to evangelize a lot. And all tricks are good. You do whatever you have, but you're gonna do that every day, and you're gonna do this with every department all the time. And good example for that was, and I heard this story twice, it's exactly the same story in different situation, where I think it was Videotron or another company like that, they were looking for a codec. So a codec for encoding visual and encoding the sound, and they were doing some kind of a testing with people. And the test was about exactly the same codec was used with the same settings for the visual, for the video, but two different codecs for audio, one better than the other. And they all rated the codec with the better audio, saying it's better, it looks better. No one noticed that sound was better. In fact, they all said, yeah, the picture is really better with this one. So that's just a proof. And these stories, if you can collect them, just keep them with you. You're going to need them when you're arguing, saying, it's going to cost money. I don't care. Yeah, but it's important. You're going to gain something else. So these are the kind of evangelization you have to do. So balance of power. That's the triangle. So interactivity, for sure, that's the most important for game, because it's game, and it's what makes games different than any other medium. And the artistic and technology side. So if we look briefly, interactivity, it's not a linear medium, it's modular. So these kind of little modules that interact together, and I'll explain that later on. It's about avoiding repetition, a dynamic environment, and so on. Artistic, it's more the audio production, or you're creating your production to fit what was the game intention. What are the game intentions at this moment? So you're sculpting that, not just because it sounds good, because it sounds the way that everyone's tried to make this sound, this game, playable, and so on. And technology, well, it's all about what are your tools, on which platforms you're going to deliver this game, and performance, for sure. So if we end the hard reality, you don't necessarily have the budget or the time or the resources to do it. So let's fit this with this harsh reality here. So, and that's where the fun starts. Audio people are really creative most of the time. So interactivity means modularity. What I want to say about it is, if you take a film, you know that the plane explosion arrives at this moment, and it's fixed, it's there. So the composer is happy. You know that there's a plane explosion there. So he's preparing, like 1 minute before the music change already, and he's creating some kind of build-up, and he just dropped the music just 2 seconds before the explosion. Huge sound effects, and just after the sound effects release, the music come in. Fantastic. And it's fixed. It doesn't change. Same thing for the music. You can prepare your chorus and your break and your guitar solo and so on. For a game, the player controls it. So the plane might explode 1 million times or never. You never know about it. And you never know when. So you have to think in an event. These are events, possible events. The plane might explode, maybe not. Might explode there or somewhere else. Or before I know this key information from the story, or after. So how do you react to it? For a movie, the music that precedes the explosion might be different based on what's happening in the story, what you know as a spectator. In game, well, you'll have to define it at runtime. So you need help. You need your programmers, you need your storytellers to say, can you tell me if it's before, after, and so on. So we're going to talk about it, how you're attaching or how you're getting information from the game to sculpt your sound. So most of the time, you're reacting. The audio is reacting. And I think the first mistake that everyone is doing when you start as a sound designer or an audio lead for a game is you still think like a linear person, because here at the school, we're all, well, maybe not in electroacoustic, but you're the kind of exception. But if you're a musician or if you're just evolving around sound, it's always linear. So I think the first time, who played Splinter Cell? Almost half of you. So Splinter Cell is some kind of a stealth game. So you're kind of a military guy, and you're infiltrating places. And it's all about not making sound, so that you're crouching, and you can take the guy by the back, and so on. And the sound designer that was responsible, was a new sound designer, and I was responsible to train the guy. And he was on Splinter Cell, so did some training and so on, and after some time, I said, okay, let's start your first sound design on paper. Because your best tool as an audio lead is Microsoft Word and Excel. You're not working on Pro Tools. You're kind of defining what is the game, and you could have like huge ducks. So anyway, so he's
giving me the doc after a week or two. We're just meeting, we're talking about it, and he had a place where, for the music design, he was saying, well, the guy at a certain moment will cross the street, cross the door, and on the other side of the door there's something, and so on in the story. And I say, okay, what is it about the music? Well, for the music, I want the music to evolve so that when he's going, I've got some sense of something will happen on the other side. And I said, okay, but what if he's just turning back and he's going there? Or what if the phone rang in the living room and he's just stopped in the front of the door like this and you've got some waiting animation? And what about your music? What about your building tension music? And the click was there. He just said, okay, I'll be there next week. And he just he grabbed the document and said, okay, I understood now. So you're reacting to that. You cannot precede most of the time what's happening. So, modularity. What does it mean? It means that, especially for sound effect, it means that you have to take what's happening in real life and or just an object, let's say the plane or let's say a gun, and you cannot, for a movie, it's really simple. You've got a gun, the guy's shooting, so you're just taking these sounds and you put it on the picture and that's it. But for a video game, you'll have to cut or to decompose this gun into all the little different pieces that make sounds on the gun. Because you don't know when it's going to start triggering, when it's going to release the trigger, and what's happening with the way the player is playing. So, for example, this is called a minigun. And it's like huge, it's on a helicopter, and you're kind of floating everything around it. But let's say you've got a minigun in your game. So for a film, it's simple. You just take minigun sounds and you're putting that on the picture. But if you have to reproduce it, what are the events that you know from the game that you can use for that, first of all? You just know when you press the button and when it's going to release it. That's it. That's the only information you have. So I've got two events. Play minigun and stop minigun. But now, what are the sounds I will attach to these two events? What are the sounds? Go.
You have just the sound of the gun beginning to spin before it fires, I guess.
And if you notice, you've got some kind of a motor, and it's an electric motor that makes these barrels spinning. And because it's physics, so you've got some acceleration. So it starts spinning, and then when it's stable, it starts shooting this moment, and then you've got some deceleration. So you've got shooting, you've got bullets, right? So ka 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 ka. And you've got shells. And shells fall on the ground. What's the material on the ground?
It could change.
So this is where you get, okay, it could change. So you go into the modeler, the lead modeler, and say, hey, how many different materials? And what is the list of the materials? Well, I've got an Excel sheet here. He's looking, and I don't know, maybe 20? Let me look, and don't find the document. And this is the insecurity stuff. Don't know. You just don't know. He said, well, I have to produce shell sounds and footstep sound and all kind of sounds. And well, look in the game. Well, I don't see nothing in the game. There's no textures yet. So, but still, so you make a plan with him. Okay, I leave you 3 weeks. In 3 weeks, can you give me all the texture? Okay, good. 3 weeks after, you go, hey, do you have the texture? Yes, yeah, so this is the list. But it just evolves over time anyway. So this is the insecurity part. It's human, and it's like kind of evolving over time. It's transforming, and it's really interesting. But anyway, so that's, yeah.
So do you guess the kinds of textures that you think that they're going to end up using and try to plan ahead?
Well, you can guess, but you've got a budget, right? So if you produce footsteps for broken tiles, well, maybe that's money in the garbage, so maybe not. So yeah, you can, yeah, there's always concrete and grass and these kind of texture, but you cannot guess that much. So you start with temporary sounds, saying, okay, I'll start with them. And this is, if you look at your 24 months, I would say for all my games, my first 18 months were all temporary sounds, just placeholders, just so that it makes sound. So
I know that the game code triggers the sound. So the code fits. It's there. And later on when it's going to stabilize and I'm going to really sure that these are my textures, now I've started production and I just switch the WAV file and remix them and so on. So if we look, just an example here of, or maybe I'll wait for the second part. Let me wait for the second part. We're going to look at the minigun example and how it's created in WISE, and we're going to see a lot of examples in WISE for that. So another aspect is real-time property modification. So it's one thing, triggering events, that's the core of what you have. There's an event, a game event, and you're attaching to this game event to trigger sounds. But sounds evolve over time. So you need to get some ways to make these sounds evolving as well. So let's say you've got a crowd, but your crowd gets more or less excited based on the action. So let's say, I don't know, it's a fighting game or a boxing game, and you've got your crowd. So you will have a lot of reaction and a lot of intensity and so on. And depending if you're in a gymnasium or on a stadium, it's not the same kind of crowd. So you will look for a mechanism, and you will... And at this point, you were going to work with the programmer saying, can you evaluate what is, or they will probably evaluate that anyway, but can you give me the actual excitement factor of the crowd? And I will use this value to change the volume of my sounds and to change which sounds are playing, and I will blend these sounds together based on the excitement level. And based on am I home or am I a visitor or things like that. So you need to attach to what's happening in the game. And you'll get attached to some state changes as well. So everything that you can hook on to will be useful as the sound guy. So every information you can have from the state machine, from the AI, from the physics will be useful to transform your sound. So these are the main two mechanisms. Triggering events and make these sounds transforming over time. I've got a crowd example after that, so. Yeah. Okay, in the interactivity, there's always the fact that avoiding repetition is really important. Because walking in a game, you could hurt a lot on the same sound. And there's a lot of concrete in certain levels or tile and so on. So you have to be sure that you get some diversity. And in your budget, you cannot have, and budget both in terms of money and both in terms of how much memory you have allocated for sound. So when I started, it was on a PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2. PlayStation 1 was 500K for sound. That's it. And PlayStation 2 was 4 times better, 2 megs. That's it. So let's fit all the materials in 2 megs, so you get to be clever about which sounds you're going to have variations for. So that's the memory thing. So what can you use to help you with the same assets, the same WAV file, to make some diversity, some... Well, for sure you can change a WAV file, but you can change the audio properties. So randomly change the volume, the pitch, the low-pass filter of these sounds when it's playing. So for example, let's create a random offset of my volume. The footstep sound is at minus 10, but every time you're triggering this sound, pick a random volume between minus 5 and minus 15 dB. So it's just different. And change the pitch randomly as well, and put some low pass filter. So it's still the same WAV file, but at least it modulates a bit. So if you get 4, 5, 6 variations of WAV file that are using all these transformations, you're going to get some feeling that it's something different. It's not perfect, but still, it's better. Or over time, let's put some envelope and let's randomize these segments so that it's just a bit different every time it's playing. Or some, that's what a good trick. There's a company, Relic, they're doing a company of heroes. Someone of you? Yeah, I got some, yeah. So what they were doing for creating room tones. And that's really important to have room tones in a game, just to, so that you've got something covered. And because in real life we're always having room tones, so if you cut the music, there's something sustaining the audio there.
And so their ways to take just a little piece of memory was to take a low, some kind of a drone, some kind of a sound, 2 seconds looping. But they were adding an LFO on top of that, and they were randomizing the height and the length of this LFO, so that it was but evolving all the time. So you couldn't tell that it was a 2 second sound. So these are just little tricks to help you managing your memory. And for music, don't write music with repetitive pattern. That's the first pitch you have to do with your composer. So if your composer goes, and you ask for 30 seconds, well, that's not 30 seconds, that's 2 seconds repeated. So, and this is why there's a lot of orchestral music in games these days, just because it's just easier to develop something with classical music or kind of orchestral music. But it's really important to get them out of these patterns. And it's difficult just because rock and roll and electronic music and so on, we're all pattern-based. So you have to get a composer and push him so that, or push her so that it goes around that. Even though if it's techno, well, let's do techno, but let's do something different. And silence exists. And use them. And use more silence than music. It's just more effective when the music arrives. So, and the typical budget is something like, I don't know, 60 minutes of music, maybe 80 minutes of music. For a game that lasts 10 hours, 15, 20, or World of Warcraft, you're playing for years. they're kind of addicted, like there are 5 hours a day of World of Warcraft. So it's almost silent every time. And it's just when you've got special occasions that you've got some music arriving there and it's all magical and inspiring and so on. And it's used as a reward. It becomes as a reward mechanism for that. And use some, create some dynamic response to the game event so that you've got your music playing, but based on what's happening, just put some stingers on top of it. So it's just a feedback mechanism again. So I've got an example where, let's say every time you're in a game and you've got music, and when you do a headshot, you're shooting someone in the head, you just kind of, some kind of hit on top, bam, of the music, just to get something out of it. Like the band is looking at you. And when you do something, you get something. It's just more dynamic. It just changes the pattern you have, or bonus, or something like that. Okay, so that was the interactivity. If we look at the artistic part of it, that's the triangle again, so artistic, what serves as a vehicle for your artistic direction? The first thing is really the game design intention. So you have to sit down with your creative director, with your game designers, and you have to understand, and the script writer, what are the objectives, or what is the main objective for this game? And this is your basis to define how you're going to produce your asset and how it's going to play. And an example for that, I worked on Myst 4. I don't know, have you played Myst? Myst series? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Do you like Myst? Yeah? Okay. I hate Myst. But I was assigned to that. And Myst, we kind of read everything on the internet about feedbacks about fans and people that don't like it and so on. And something was always, we were always looking at that. People were saying, in Myst, we feel like we are a ghost in a dead environment. And it's a bit true. You're going and there's nothing. And now there's a machine with 5 levers, and you're kind of doing that, and there's a camera saying, oh, it moves there, and you're moving another one. And so that's the kind of puzzle game. So, but you're a camera. If you look at your feet, there's nothing. You're just floating there. So you're effectively a ghost in this environment. So we're saying, okay, for Myst 4, we're going to do something different. And the phrase was, Myst comes to life. That's it. Myst comes to life. So what do you do as a modeler? What do you do as an animator? What do you do as a programmer? What do you do as the sound person?
you have to bring this game to life. So you have to define new ways to put the player in context, ground the player on the floor. If you feel like a ghost floating, let's do something on the floor. So I say, okay, let's put footstep mechanism. So even though you're kind of there and you don't see if there's nothing, but anyway, it's not. When you move, because you're kind of stuck in the node, and when you go somewhere, you're kind of teleported there. But still, when you're turning, can we do something that just to, and so we kind of just created some kind of a footstep engine where it defines some angles, and when you go through a certain angle, well, it starts creating some sound, and when you stop, there's some kind of a stopping sound, and so on. So, okay, I fit on the floor. And the main gameplay in this was you're clicking. So is there a lever, is there a button? So you're clicking, and you get some kind of feedback where nothing is there. You see the hand that's kind of a, and the sound in the previous miss was whoosh, whoosh. I don't know how they do that. It's really slow, but it whoosh. Anyway, so we get the whoosh because it was like, okay, it was like that, and you had some feedback for that. But when I'm close enough to an object, we made the animation and the sound so that you can touch it just to get a feeling of the different materials. And now people were starting saying, okay, there's something, I'm there. There's a really different sound. So it just, miss comes to life. You're always in the same thinking process for that. And then you're just building new ideas, new tool around it. For Splinter Cell, the idea was, it's stealth. Nobody should see you, and you're silent. That's the main gameplay. And you can finish the game without killing anyone in this game. That was the main idea for the gameplay. So, what do you do for your footsteps? Again, not about footsteps. So it was just, how can we have a mechanism where when you're really slow, you don't have or almost no sound, and when you go higher and so on? And what was the tools to use this? So just different ways to accomplish what you want. So that's one idea. For sure, location and time and space, that will influence your artistic direction, for sure. If it's a sci-fi or a cowboy game, you're going to define some what kind of sound you're going to hear. The main character, but look at the main character. What's behind the character? What's the psychology of this character? How does he see the world? Because you're playing the main character. So, like movies are doing, they're really sculpting sound around a state of mind or something like that. The scenario, for sure, and so on. But the game design intention, that's the first place to start, for sure. Mixing your game, well, as I said before, everything that applies on for films applies for games. So, for example, the center speaker. How do you address the center speaker? Most of the time for movies, you've got voice in the center speaker and nothing else. Because for a film, voice is king. That's the most important aspect, it's voice, because that's your story. So even though you're in the middle of a storm and you're 200 miles away, if you say, help me, you hear it. And if you say, help me, he's hearing it. It's in the center speaker. That's the same thing for games. And if you leave space for the speaker with just voices and you put your music on the other, even though you've got a phantom center for sure, but leave it on the left and right and just create more space. And don't do too much with the subwoofer. The LFE is low frequency effect. It's an effect. It's not a de facto channel. It's something you're using carefully and just a certain time to enhance certain situation. And when you're dealing with the platforms on the PS3, on the 360 and so on, these platforms, by default, output in 5.1, but you can make them output in stereo. And they're encoding in Dolby Digital automatically. But when it's in stereo, it simply drops the LFE channel. So you have to be clever. So when you're using an LFE, you know that in the stereo context, it's not heard. So it's not a sound by itself. It's an effect that enhances the other sound that sustains the event and so on. But mixing a game has special particularities for sure, because it's really hard to reproduce all circumstances. If you played, I don't know, Grand Theft Auto, try to reproduce everything possible in this game. It's just impossible. It's a living city with thousands of gameplays, and you're doing them in any orders and so on. So it's not possible. So how do you mix every pieces? This is where you start thinking in modules. So you mix your main character by itself, and you mix the cars, and you mix them, and you push them together, and you see how it fits. And on top of that, you start creating new rules where you're hooking again with game parameters, with the AI state from the code, so that I'm running the car, but if I've got another car beside me, car is mainly noise, right? It's noise that change over time. So you don't want two cars there, so two sources of noise that stands beside it, just destroy your mix. So you're gonna find some rules where if I'm got a car inside 5 meters of distance, for example, and the difference between the two cars is almost nothing, or it's less than this number, well, let's duck the second car. Just change the volume of this car. But if a car passed by me and the speed is really higher, let's push the car so that I've got a feeling that there's some pass-by around me. So you're doing dynamic mixing. You're kind of mixing them together as modules, but you get to define some rules so that when they're interacting together, you've got an intelligent mix on top of that. It's not intelligent, but you're defining some things to clean up the mix and to get one focus at a time. If you've got two cars, you cannot have two focus. If you, and especially if it's a racing game, try to play a racing game in your living room in split screen, in manual. It's not possible. You don't know when your rev is at which moment to shift. So when I'm playing in split screen, I'm always playing in automatic mode, even though I prefer in manual, just because I don't hear my car. So what can you do? So I've designed a game for that, and we had an option where you could offset the cars on the speakers. So you could say, okay, I'm gonna be on the left speaker, and you're gonna be on the right speaker, so it could help. But these are the kind of thing you will add on top of that. The art of compromise. Yeah, that's my banana story. I helped a sound designer on a Disney game, a Tarzan game. And you know the coin in Super Mario Bros? In Tarzan, it was the banana. So the banana was doing a ping kind of sound. And we had two kind of gameplays in this game. One was exploration, so pretty quiet, jungle ambience and so on. And in between these exploration missions, we had extreme sport, like in the movie. So you could have some raftings or a bungee diving and so on. And again, the game intention. So I helped the sound designer. I arrived really late in this project just to help him. And I was looking at that and we said, okay, we should push the extreme moment so that it's really extreme and it brings some emotion. And when it's exploration, it's quieter and so on. So I started mixing the exploration and mixed my banana. That's fine. And when I jumped into the rafting, for the raft, we wanted something really exciting. So it was really loud and so on. And when we got some banana, I don't hear the banana. It was just too quiet. So, and at this moment, we didn't have the tool to get like different mixes or different sounds for the same object. So we kind of ended up where it was too loud in the exploration and too soft in the extreme sport, and it was just not good. So again, if we had more time in between, we could have looked at these intentions saying, okay, there's really some hard differences between these different maps, so let's find a mechanism when I can trigger different volumes or different sounds and so on. But many times you're, yeah, in the art of compromise. And the same sounds are used thousands of times. It's just harder to make them sound great. And after some time you get some hear fatigue and so on. And it's impossible to hear all your voices. 25,000, and I'm not joking, that's real numbers. And 25,000 of dialogue. You start play,
and it takes days just to listen to all of them. And you've got many times where, I don't know, there's a situation and there's eight random variation. You're hearing one of them. And if you don't talk to the guy anymore, well, you just have these seven that are not heard and so on. So this is why you have to have your every dialogue is really well fine-tuned at the same game level and so on. Even though they are from male or female and different actors don't project the same way, but you have to be sure that they're fit a small dynamic range in between so that you will establish your mix. If this voice cut, the other should cut as well. And then you receive your German localization. And you've got two problems with German. First, it could be too loud and so on, so you have to adapt. But second, it's long. They speak forever to say the same thing we're saying in English. So you've got other problems. You've got your cinematics, where you've got your this guy talk, the other one, and the other one. And then in German, well, it just overlapped. So, okay, wow. What do you do? So you've got two choices. You can have a cinematic engine that adapts to this and waits for the end of the file before making the camera jump and so on. Or you, really early on, you work with the translator, saying, in this cinematic, in English, it lasts 5.3 seconds. You've got plus or minus 10% of error, but it should be 5.5 max. So not only on the recording side, but directly on the translation, so that he's choosing words that fit. And then you record these files, and you check again that it's 5.5. And you've got some post-production, you check again, and you're reintegrating, and you check again. Could be a long process. So this is why you've got sound integrators in your game and QA. So, yeah, okay, we're talking about that. Okay, technology. Let me correct something there. All right. Performance. I learned that there's no S at performance. Huh? Am I right? Yeah? Okay, so it's incredible, no? It's the most beautiful studio I see. It's an old mile somewhere in Great Britain, and you can see the water here. Really inspiring, no? So that was my dream before jumping into the video game and before knowing that I will sit in the middle of other desks everywhere. So you would like to sound like this. But you've got 10% of a P4 G3 and maybe 20 megs of RAM if you're really lucky. So, good luck. And I've got an example. It kind of shocked me. When I was working, I was really pissed off, in fact. I was working on the PS1 for a long time with 500K. And you managed to fit your sound in 500K, and then the PlayStation 2 was arriving, and we had a lot of spec, like 2 years before, for the graphics, like trillions of polygons and so on for the graphics, and it will be really, really, really hot. And it took like 3 months before the release of the development kit to know what about the sound, and the sound was 2 meg. They kind of put 2 processor and pushed the memory, and that's it. 2 megs! We're in 2000 or 99. So 2 megs, imagine Michael Jackson with, what was the name of the producer of the trailer album? Imagine them together with 2 megs of RAM. And megs of RAM. It don't loop. I don't have enough to loop. That's 2 megs of RAM in CD quality. Oh yes. So now if you've got 20 megs of RAM, well, you don't have the song. The complete song. Anyway, so what do? You compress like hell. And you're not using stereo files when you can use mono file. And why wasting sample rate with 48K sounds when you can put the sound at 6K if it's a Thunder? So
you do a lot of sample rate, a lot of mono conversion, and long reverb trails, forget about it. Let's record them dry, and we'll put some cheap reverb on top of it, dynamic in real time. And what about the codecs? So you will use 80 PCM, which is some kind of a 3.5:1 compression, and maybe MPEG, like MP3 or Vorbis. Ogg Vorbis is pretty good quality for small bandwidth, so, but you're really taking all your sounds and you're squashing them like hell to make them fit. So that's one of the first constraints for that. And I will talk about it later on. The other, it's the memory, there's the CPU, and there's the bandwidth. So you can stream, I don't know, depending on the game, you will stream maybe two stereo track with one voice and so on. But certain games stream all the graphics as well. So it could be one file of music, one stream for the voice, and that's it. Let's try to do crossfade with one voice. If you crossfade, this is two voice. Hey, you're taking two voice. So you cannot crossfade. So you fight with them and you evangelize and you tell all the stories about sounds. And after a couple of months, well, maybe you're going to have crossfade at certain moments. So wrap up. So audio knowledge. So for sure you have to, everything you can know about audio will be useful later on. So you could be physics, acoustic, to down to how to produce good sound. Everything is necessary. Human skills, that's a real job. That's where certain sound, certain audio leads, sound designer are pretty good or not so good at their job. It's how you can evangelize and take all these people and make them believe that audio will help them and that it will, it's worth it to put some more memory or more bandwidth or more CPU and so on. For sure, it's technological challenge, and it's really long and involving project. And you work with the same people every day and every day and every night and so on. So people are funny more of the time and they're pretty interesting and so on, but it's just, yeah, it's involving. And in the middle of the night, you wake up and you say, hey, what about this sound? I don't know. But just kind of there all the time. And I'll give the PowerPoint so that you'll have access to this, so you don't have to rush too much maybe to for certain references. So certain associations like the GANGS, the Game Audio Network Guild, or the Interactive Audio Special Interest Group, and the International Game Developer Association. So if you're interested about games and especially about audio for these two first ones, some website like Music for Games, Develop Mag, and Gamma Sutra, there's cool stories there. And if you can afford to go to the GDC, that's every year, it's really the entire community, not the entire, but a lot of people, like, I don't know, 12,000 game developers for a week, and there's a lot of sessions about how to produce games and so on around it, and it's pretty interesting. And some books. So maybe you already read this book. Pretty interesting for designing sound. And it's all about movie, but it's the way, the thinking process explained in this book behind how did they produce the sound this way for this movie is really interesting. And it's about like the intention of the game and so on. That's a good reference for it, and it applies to game for sure. The fat man, George Alistair Sanger, he's taller than me and he's really thin, but he's the fat man. And this guy was there when it all started. And at the end of the book, you've got three columns of all the game he wrote, okay, and it's like pages and pages and pages of game. He wrote, so, and the book is really interesting. It's all over the place, and yeah, I think there's like 25 different fonts and it's catches, and it's really interesting. Alex Brandon, it's more about the audio management, really more about scheduling, budget, team, how to organize them, and so on for this. And Aaron Marks, more about for composers, how to cut a contract with a game company. And yeah, and for films, many times you've got some, you're paid by some kind of royalties,
when you're writing for games, one guy did it once or twice, but you won't have royalties if you're producing voices, sound effects, or music. It's all work for hire and so on. But still, there's some good tricks about composing music for games and contracts and so on. So, yeah, that's it for the first part. Question before we... Okay, so we'll take a short break, and now we're going to put our hands into Wise and see some kind of example.
Like, 10 minutes or so?